recording. Katie Lynn's here for the matching. We look similar tonight.
We kind of do.
Guys,
Father, son.
Do we look okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we. Yeah. I do have some of your mannerisms, so it might get a little weird.
You've got my wit for sure.
I do. I got your humor.
Except you don't think I'm funny.
I think you're funny. I just don't like to admit it in front of all my friends here tonight.
Well, you know.
You remember that time where I was in, I think I was in elementary school, and you came in for some reason.
Yeah.
And I hid.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was giving a talk to your classroom on, actually, I brought my skeleton in there, a full skeleton and the bones. I was talking about the bones to your elementary class, and so I walked in there with a skeleton. I saw you walking down the hall, and I yelled out, "Hey, Ben," thinking, you know, we were like besties and everything, and you run in the bathroom. You didn't even want to be associated with me.
I said I was sorry then. I'm sorry now. I feel terrible. I was young.
Yeah.
I was young and dumb.
If you remember, I had a cigarette dangling out of that skeleton's mouth.
I do remember
that. I thought that was funny. You know, but none of the kids did, you know.
I'm sure.
I was trying to get them not to smoke.
Nowadays, I think they love it. Let's see. We're over on Instagram, too. Esty Bestie, what's going on? Jasmine's in the building over on Instagram. Go give her a follow, guys. She's putting out so much cool content around aesthetics and dermaplaning. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Jasmine, buccal facial massage. You were on there with Tempest. Last week, but make sure you guys watch that episode on blue light. We're getting tons of blue light right now, and we need to protect ourselves somehow.
We need our glasses on.
We need something.
Yeah.
Connie, what's going on? Great to see you. Thank you guys for hanging out. As you guys know, this is a Performance Medicine Show. We answer your health and wellness questions. We do this live every single Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Real quick, because I want to get to Gual. I told her that I would get to this. It's around fenbendazole, and I'm doing this because she's in France, and I can't imagine what time it is there.
In France, wow.
It's got to be in like the 4 a.m., 3 a.m. range. So I want to get to this real quick, and I'm not going to put it up because there's a lot here. So I'm just going to read, let you kind of browse through there. It's this one right here. My mother had leiomyosarcoma of the mesentery and multiple secondary implants in the lung and liver. Largest tumor is 8 centimeters and is pressing on the right superior vena cava.
Cava. There's a few words. Mesentery and cava. Yeah.
Mesentery and cava. She underwent chemotherapy but didn't have the effect the doctor expected. Going to place an emergency stent to help with this compression in the vein, and there's not much we can do. My family is afraid of fenbendazole, and I went to the vet and bought it and took it to test. As I am very sensitive to medications and didn't feel any side effects. Okay, so the question is, I would like to know which protocol you recommend, the 220 or 440, and if you can recommend where to buy it. They're in Brazil and France.
I would just go to it's over the counter. It's not, you don't have to get it from, you know, the local vet store or anything, but it's
like, how do you get it over the counter?
Just order it from Happy Healers.
Okay. You'd have to have a doctor?
No, you don't need a prescription or
okay.
anything.
Okay.
It's over the counter. But yeah, number one, don't be afraid of fenbendazole. You know, it's safe. It's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt anybody. But I would use the Joe Tippin protocol of 222 milligrams a day. That's what we use generally. But go look at some of his stuff and look at some of our stuff that we've done with Dr. Dan Bolton. He's been on our podcast a couple times. He's a cancer survivor and certainly took it and still takes it. But I think the 222 milligram is good. But, yeah, I hope she does okay. It sounds, you know, like she is in need of immediate attention. Hopefully she's getting all the other stuff as well. I'm sure she is. You know, we don't try to talk anybody out of doing the traditional chemo or surgery or any of that. We're all for that. We just like to add everything else we can do.
Yeah.
Ketogenic diet, sometimes IV vitamin C, sometimes artemisinin. But yeah, don't be scared. And there was a recent controversy about the Happy Healers, the place we tell people to go to get it. They just order it and they send it to them. As a matter of fact, we can put that address up here, maybe at the end or something, if we have it.
So would they get it from the Happy Healers site?
Yeah, they just order it. They just order it.
Okay.
But, you know, there was some recent controversy somewhere that Carter had seen that somebody was claiming, well, it might not be 100% pure FinBen. And so,
from the Happy Healer site?
Yeah, from that site. Okay. So I talked to Dr. Bolton about it, and he actually paid for it to be sent and analyzed with a mass spectrometer. He, you know, he's a PhD chemist, so
no kidding.
He had the means to do that. And it was 100% fenbendazole. So don't worry, you're getting the good stuff.
That's amazing.
That place.
He is such a good guy.
Yeah.
Like anything, guys, watch the couple videos we've done with Dan Bolton. One is just super. He's a super, super smart guy, but also very inspiring. His story is incredible. So you're saying he actually went out of his way to get
he paid for it
to get it tested.
And he sent me all the results too. Yeah,
awesome.
From a non-biased source.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So it was really what it was another company that apparently sold it, trying to, you know, undercut this Happy Healer. So, so it's good stuff. But I would go with the 222.
Now, when you say 222
milligrams daily,
222 milligrams daily. All right, Gual, I hope that helps. You're probably not with us live, but when you see this, we're thinking about you, and I hope that helps just a little bit. I'm going to get to some questions that came in throughout the week over email. I like this one because it's a general question, but one, I kind of want to know this too. Which supplements do we need to cycle off of occasionally? Obviously, we're recommending a lot of supplements. I know how you recommend people do one at a time. How do you cycle off?
Well, one at a time, meaning if you're adding something, don't add a bunch of them at the same time in case you didn't feel well. You wouldn't know what it was. But most of them, you know, you don't need to cycle off of. You know, it ends up you're going to forget one day a week anyway. So for me, that's kind of a cycle off day, one day a week.
Yep.
But really, there's only maybe – it's a good question. Really, I haven't really thought about it too much, but – probably NAC and maybe quercetin, some of the immune modulators. Those are two that I look at that I think about cycling off of, maybe if you wanted to. Again, I don't think it makes a big deal.
And by cycling, is there like a time frame? I know you're saying a built-in cycle of like, I'm traveling this one day. Like for me, example, today I'm, you know, going up and back to Knoxville. Might not get to my vitamins today. So that could count as like my cycling.
Yeah, right. That's what I think. But it's totally arbitrary. I mean, you could do it, you know, 1 month, twice a year to stop taking quercetin or NAC. The other stuff, I don't think you really need to cycle off of. I don't see a real advantage to it, to be honest with you. But most people are going to take their vitamins about 6 days a week anyway instead of seven. Mm. So if you're worried about it.
Speaking of that, there is a question around, let's see here. There's a question around quercetin. Let me see if I can find it. As a reminder, guys, for those of you who are with us live, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us, for one. But if you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get to every single one tonight. This is a question around vitamins. As I finish up some supplements, I'm anxious to try some of the Dr. Rogers line. Question: if I do the super vitamin plus happy, healthy hair, I would not be getting quercetin, which has been in my previous vitamin C. Would I need to add that separately? It's such a great question. I love the questions like this. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you would. You know, here's the way I do it. That's a great, great question. And what I do personally, you know, the super vitamin, which is loaded, it comes in three smaller capsules. What I do, I take two of those, and then I take one of the happy, healthy hair and one of the immune formula. And the immune formula has quercetin and NAC in it.
Huh.
So I do that. If I would happen to get sick, I'd probably go full bore on the on all of them, except maybe the happy, healthy hair. But
yeah, because that's a lot of zinc.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. You know, again, the reason I put 30 milligrams of zinc in there, because some people can't handle even 50. And, you know, I don't push the zinc up to 100 like I used to tell people. So, you know, the immune form is going to have a little zinc in it too. So, you know, you can kind of add them up. But that's kind of how I get around that. Great question. You could take quercetin and extra, just want to get it by itself, or you could do the immune formula, which has NAC in it as well. But I always look at the ingredients and kind of, you know, tally them up if you're worried about it. Again, you're going to know if your stomach's not pleased with it, you'll get nauseated. And zinc is the main one on that that could nauseate you. Take it with food, though.
I'm taking two of the immune, two supers, and I'm also adding a vitamin C. That's a lot of C.
Yeah. No, not really. Not really.
That's such a great question. Any questions around those, especially those combinations, let us know. Like, because I know that can be kind of confusing. Let's go to, this was an interesting one that came through Facebook, and I really appreciated it because we've been talking, one, today was about berberine, which is a kind of a natural GLP-1. Obviously, the semaglutides, the Ozempics, tirzepatides, Mounjaros. Question is, are you offering micro-dosing drips of GLP-1? My husband and I tried the injections and had too many side effects. I think it could be a dosing issue and would like to try again at a smaller dose. Have you heard of this? I hadn't heard of microdosing.
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Osborne talked about that a little bit. But I don't know, drips, you're talking about IV? I haven't done that, but just micro-dosing, which is taking a lot smaller dose, just like... Okay. You know, of course, on the Ozempic semaglutide, you start at 0.25. You could even go lower than that. It just really depends on what the goal is. Are you doing it for weight loss? Are you doing it for diabetes or pre-diabetes?
It's drops. Not drips. Okay, sorry about that.
So it's supposed to be drops?
Yeah, so microdosing drops of the GLP-1s. Oh,
with like sublingual? I know some of the compounders are making the sublingual doses, but yeah, you could try that. You know, one of the compounders could certainly make you some up. I don't think it's as effective orally as it is through a shot. But at least I've used both of them on people, and it seems like the shots work best. The other thing you could do, sounds like you tried semaglutide, you might want to try tirzepatide, the generic name for the Zepbound or Mounjaro. So you could try that. It doesn't seem to have nearly as many GI side effects. Certainly you could try the sublingual small doses. Really what I like to do on a person that wants to do it for weight loss is to work their dose up as high as they can tolerate it, where they're losing weight until they reach their goal. Then I'll back off and give them a really small dose just to maintain it. Because 90% of people, when they get off of it entirely, they gain a lot of the weight back.
But if you're at like a very small dose, one, it makes it last longer, so
yeah,
save some money in that regard.
Yeah. Like I had a lady today, she's doing 0.25, which is a starter dose, every 2 weeks and maintaining her weight loss.
Really?
Yeah. She worked her way up, of course, and then lost the weight, worked her way back down. Now all she needs is 0.25 every 2 weeks. I would call that microdosing, really.
Can I ask you more about that one? Because it came up in office this week around muscle loss with the semaglutide or with these GLP-1s. I know you're – what are you seeing with that in office, and how are you telling people?
Somebody asked me that today, and really, yes, you can lose muscle with Ozempic because, you know, some of that weight loss can be muscle. There's no doubt. The person asked me today how to avoid doing that. And really, number one, eat enough protein. Not many adults eat enough protein. And two, work out. You know, lift some weights. You're not going to lose muscle. And look at your hormones. You know, you need testosterone to build muscle. If you're low, you're going to have a hard time. So look at your hormones, eat enough protein, and lift weights.
So that's the
resistance.
Those three things.
And really, that's why, actually, because of Ozempic and these GLP-1 agonists, that's why I bought that in-body 570 machine to measure. Ideally, I like to measure it before they start it, and then in a few months later, to see if they've lost any muscle.
Yeah.
You know, how much visceral fat they've lost. It's just a great machine.
You know, I see Robin Riddle, our nurse practitioner in the West Knoxville office. Robin, what's up? So great to see you. I was with her. She was going over my InBody, and she did. She said, even like me, I'm not getting enough protein in. It's really wild.
It's hard to get enough protein in.
You're not, like, it really is. If you're not actually being intentional with it, most likely you're not. And I know that people on, you know, a semaglutide, on a tirzepatide, you almost kind of have to force yourself to get more protein because you're not really going to be that hungry.
You know, I drink some of the perfect aminos every day. It gives me 30 grams of the 8 essential amino acids, which I like. But yeah, I try to. As a matter of fact, today I ordered some grass-fed, organic, whole foods beef jerky that Andy had. You know, on our trip, when we went on our trip to yeah. Franklin, Tennessee, Andy popped out some, and those are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to snack on them if I happen to need a snack in the mid-afternoon or something.
I love it. I love it.
Get more protein in that way.
I'm going to put this up from Robin because she went over my InBody with me, and she's saying she's aiming for 150 to 160 grams of protein per day. And she's exactly right. It is it really is a job.
For people that are working out and trying to stay fit, I tell them a gram per pound.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Robin, thank you for that. I see Kathy, what's going on? I see you. Josh, thanks for that question. I love that question. I see my brother Steve is in the building. Steve, what's going on, man? We love you. Thank you, Barbara, for that question. We're going to get to that in just a second. Thank you, D. Lynn. Let's keep moving here because I want to get to all these questions that are coming in live. Let's see here. Let's get to, this is interesting. I hear lots of older people dealing with spinal stenosis. What are the things we should be doing now, 40s to 60s, to help prevent that down the road? As it sounds, it could be reversed once you are, it can't be reversed once you are dealing with it. This is around spinal stenosis. One, I know you're super interested in the spine.
That's a great question, yeah. Yeah, I've had my problems with, I have a little bit of that myself, but you're exactly right. You need to start now to prevent it down the road. I've been telling Ben that. But yeah, the only cure for spinal stenosis is surgery. And you really don't want to get that unless you absolutely have to. You know, if you're getting weakness in the legs, then you need to think about it. Or you have decreased reflexes. Especially on one side. But yeah, I think what I'm encouraging people to do is, number one, get a baseline lumbar spine x-ray. You should do that. I need to set you up with that. Just to look and see if you have any curvature in your spine. Mm. You know, it's a lot easier to tell on an x-ray than it is by lean over and touch your toes. Let me look at your back like we used to do.
Sure.
Because we miss a lot that way, I think. You know, we try to do a scoliosis check on every kid that I do a sports physical on, but it's really cursory and probably not real accurate. The things to do is to, number one, don't get overweight where you can get a lot of extra pressure on your spine. And I would not recommend that you do really heavy squats. Mm. You know, don't load up your spine at a younger age. You'll pay for it. You'll wish you hadn't have done that too heavy. I'm not against squats or deadlifts, but if you load up that back early on through weights that you shouldn't be lifting, and you know, we talk a lot about functional patterns, that new program that we're doing. Actually, we're both doing this, and it's more of a functional way to work out. We'll probably do a podcast on that because it's really unique and really
it's interesting.
Different way of working out than traditionally is. It's really interesting to me. So what I've done personally is I'm going to see if it straightens my spine out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think I flipped my x-ray on here before. I don't mind people looking at it because it's really off. I mean, my L2 is not sitting over my L3 and 4. It's way skewed out. And, of course, at my age, too, I get a lot of degenerative disc disease. So I would really think about building, you know, maintaining your muscle in your back, you know, those muscles, and keeping them loose, getting motion in those vertebrae. Like, Yeah, you could go to a chiropractor. A lot of the good chiropractors are really good with giving you advice on that. So you could go to a chiropractor and get a baseline x-ray and, you know, and learn the type of things you need to do to keep that small amount of motion that your vertebrae have in them and keep those muscles strong on the side. Again, you know, I have a weak back, meaning a weak muscle in the low back. I think that's what's led to that. Also, posture.
Yeah.
You know, posture, poor sleeping habits. I blame it on that for me. It's really postural changes and sleeping and, you know, in poor positions.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, but I think sleeping position has a lot to do with the way your back's going to end up. So, you know, exercise your back. That functional patterns is I think, going to be pretty amazing as far as maybe even helping to straighten my back. I've seen pictures where it does.
Yeah, no doubt.
But keep those lumbar muscles really strong and even. You know, I really don't recommend a lot of pounding. I don't think man was meant to run 26 miles. And my brother won't tell you that because he's running marathons now and doing really well at it. But I just don't think all that pounding is great for your back or your joints, either one. I'd rather you sprint, personally.
It's super interesting. And a lot of this is, you know, very unique to the individual. And a lot of us play sports, and there's going to be, you know, certain things that come with that sport.
Yeah.
But it is. I'm so glad this question came
through.
It's
a great question. Great question. You ought to think about that.
Yeah, something that we all should be thinking about.
So get evaluated, and then maybe really get somebody really good like Ernie or somebody, a physical therapist, that can kind of guide you with the kind of exercises you need to do. Because if you get a lot of discrepancies, like you have a knee problem on one side or a hip problem, then you're gonna have back problems. Back problems are so debilitating. Mm. And, you know, having my problem with my back, knock on wood, it's the only thing that bothers me with being my age is my low back. Mm. And I used to poo-poo it, you know, because you got back pain, you know. But it's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
We'll keep you guys posted. One, this is going to be a conversation we, you know, are probably continuously talking about because it affects so many people. We're all wanting to, you know, age in a way where we can still move and do all the things that we love to do. So thank you so much.
And myofascial release is one of the main things you can do to you know, loosen those muscles up, therapeutic massage. And
that's something we should talk more about, is the myofascial release.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. All right. We got to keep moving here, guys. This is kind of a quick one. Do you see patients virtually? Obviously there's lots of different, you know, things to consider here as far as like where you live and things of that nature, but in short.
Yeah. Yeah. We do telemedicine, if that's what you're asking. We do, you know, one good thing that COVID brought about was the ability to practice across state lines. And now they're kind of taking that away from us. So, you know, currently, personally, I'm licensed in Tennessee and Virginia, but we may have to get licensed in every state that we see these virtual patients, which is going to be very expensive. So I don't know. Stay tuned. There's a big movement to allow doctors to practice and also nurse practitioners, PAs, across state lines, which should be right. I mean, why shouldn't you see somebody that lives in another state? You know, you're board certified, but, you know, it's local boards and money, basically. But yeah.
So yeah. Kind of like to put some, you know, so this helps as many people in here as we can. So for this question in particular, we can see patients virtually in Tennessee or Virginia. You know, so you don't have to necessarily live close to, you know, Kingsport or Knoxville or Bristol, Johnson City. But you do need to be in Tennessee or Virginia at this moment. We're currently working on that and kind of working out a plan to be able to help more people.
Stay tuned.
Let's see here. That's interesting. Linda's saying Tennessee is one of the 5 states that won't allow a virtual second opinion. Yeah, it's
that won't allow.
It won't allow. It's really interesting. We're trying to stay as much on the up to date on this as possible because it's a, you know, it's a huge issue, and you know, it's limiting. But I get, you know, the reasoning. But we'll keep talking about it. Thank you for this question, and we'll we'll probably just have to keep people posted.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going here. We're about ready to take live questions. Let's get to this one here. My 15-year-old daughter suffered a concussion a few days ago. She was hit on the side of the head by a softball pitch, no helmet prior to the game starting. Goes on to say CT scan ruled out skull fracture and brain bleed, lots of head pain and blurry vision. We've started fish oil. Would hyperbaric oxygen therapy help her heal? Is there a local option for that? And goes on to say any suggestions on treatment?
Definitely. I've dealt with a lot of concussions. I was a team doctor for a football team for 30 years. Saw a lot of concussions. But yeah, certainly I always used omega-3s. I think that helps a lot. Hyperbaric oxygen is really good therapy for it if you can get it. It'd be better if you could get it in a hard shell, real hyperbaric chamber. The hospital here has one for wound healing, but it's really about impossible to get into. But some of the, you can get it. Dr. Merrill, who's a local chiropractor that I really like, has a hyperbaric oxygen chamber in his office. And there's some other people that do as well. You're going to be in a tent, but I think it's a great treatment for a concussion. The other thing you need to look at is just really not watching TV, not reading, just really vegging out and taking it easy and being followed very closely. Don't do anything exertional too much until for a week at least, and then slowly work your way back into it. If you have any exertional headache, back down and don't do anything. But any kind of thing you can do not to overstimulate the brain, stay away from caffeine and those type things. It usually gets better, and you just don't want to get repeated concussions. That's when you get into the problem, second impact syndrome and all. But concussions are real. You just don't want a, sounds like she'll do fine, but you just don't want a lot of them. But my go-to is fish oil. That's a good choice. So great question.
We'll be thinking about her. I hope she recovers quickly. I hope that helps. And keep us posted on how that's going. She recovers. Okay, guys, I think that does it for the questions that came in through the week. Thank you guys in advance for sending your questions in. For the future, if you guys want to send a question in anonymously, you can email me, ben@performancemedicine.net, and I kind of curate them throughout the week and bring them up here on Tuesdays. Jessica, I see your question. Thank you. That's a great question around thyroid. I see walking moments. Thank you. Carol, I see you. Jeff, I see you. All right, let's get to the live questions here, guys. We're going to the comments here. So if you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get to everyone tonight. Let's see where we are. DPC is asking, I'm 62, took a J&J shot in 2020, had COVID end of January 2024, horse accident in January 2024. My joints are still inflamed like I have post-COVID. What can I do? And for everyone's sake, can we just keep this,
Okay. Say too much.
I don't want you to say. I want you to be as helpful as possible.
You don't want me to talk about the jab.
No.
Okay. Because I can go off on it.
No.
It's hard to say what bothers you the worst, the jab or the horse accident, but or long COVID. I mean, maybe one out of four people got long COVID. So the things you need to do are really keep inflammation out of your body. I'd certainly have something like an extensive blood work that looked like a Cleveland Heart panel that we do that looks at inflammatory markers, cortisol levels, all that. Your joints are inflamed. I like turmeric, curcumin. That works really good. If you're having a lot of brain fog, again, I don't know if you had a concussion or what kind of injuries you had with the horse accident, but you certainly may need to get that evaluated. A lot of times what I do, and one good thing that you may want to look into, is low-dose naltrexone. I use that for all my long COVID patients, and even the big centers like Stanford, Mayo, they're all using that now. So I love low-dose naltrexone. That really helps inflammation. It helps autoimmune things. You know, you already had the jab, so, and you had COVID, so, you know, you've got a little bit of spike protein rolling around probably, but, you know, it's probably going to be a forever thing for most people anyway. But, you know, try to look at LDN, look at turmeric. You know, I'm sure you're probably on an anti-inflammatory, maybe like meloxicam. That's my favorite out of the prescription ones. And stay away from inflammatory foods. Look at your gut. Make sure your gut's working great. And just get evaluated by somebody who does a lot of long COVID treatments. We use a lot of serapeptase, bromelain, zinc, those type of things that, you know, we try to maybe get rid of the spike protein as much as we can. I like sauna. I think that works really well. But yeah, those are things you need to do, but probably ought to talk to somebody and get some blood work, see where you're at, make sure you haven't kicked off something like rheumatoid arthritis or something that can cause some joint destruction if you don't hit it pretty early. But sounds like you need to see somebody who can really take a good look at you and help you. But those, think about, look up LDN, low-dose naltrexone.
DPC, thank you for that question. To get us started off here, we're going to go to Velma over on Facebook. Should you worry about high PSA if you have already had an MRI?
So you're probably asking me if you had a high PSA, you got an MRI of your prostate that looked okay. No, I mean, the PSA is an imperfect test. You know, there's a lot of worry about a high PSA. Again, it's different if it's 5 or, you know, 30. So you need to let me know how high it is. A lot of times I'll draw something called a free PSA percentage. It gives me a more accurate PSA determination on whether that, you know, you could morph into cancer. But the MRI is reassuring. So, you know, it used to be somebody had a high PSA, you send them to a urologist, they immediately biopsy you. You know, that's old school now. Everybody gets an MRI, which you should do. And it's reassuring that it's negative. But what I would do is just follow it. I mean, you may need another MRI in a year. Just follow your PSAs, maybe even in 6 months if it's really equivocal. But I've used MRIs of the prostate for years. I sent a lot of them down to Dr. Bush in Atlanta. He used to be in Chattanooga. I was doing that 15 years ago, probably. And, you know, we helped a lot of people with prostate cancer. He's the expert, I think. He's a radiologist who only deals with prostates. And now he's even doing ablations in those candidates that have prostate cancer that is amenable to local ablation and not, you know, taking your whole prostate out. Certainly a lot less bad side effects. So don't worry, but don't forget about it either. Follow it. Get a free PSA and just monitor that MRI. If you're worried, do them both again in about 6 months.
Great question, Velma. Thank you for sending that in. We're going to go to Lisa here. Lisa always shares the broadcast. Thank you for sharing, Lisa. Lisa's asking, Dr. Rogers, what is moderate chronic neurogenic changes and what is moderate type 2 myofiber atrophy, please? Now, Lisa, you should have asked, Ben, can you even pronounce this?
You should have maybe asked a rheumatologist for that answer or a neurologist. Somebody must have had a biopsy that showed some of these changes in the neuromuscular fibers. But I'm unsure how to answer your question because I just don't see that. So I really have to defer that to a rheumatologist or do more research on it myself. So I really couldn't give you a great answer on that. I don't like to say anything I'm not sure about. So I'll look into it. And again, that's one you're probably going to have to take, you know, a specialist to kind of sort out for you. Mm.
Lisa, thank you so much for putting that in there. And Doc, thank you for that. Like, we're definitely going to be, if we don't know something, we're going to tell you. And I think the big thing is knowing who to go to for a question like that. So Lisa, thank you so much for putting that in there. Real quick, I see Velma, the PSA was 11. Thank you, Velma, for putting mm-hmm. that in there. Jeff, down to 1.33. That's awesome. Congrats to you, Jeff.
Jeff, his PSA is down to 1 point.
Yeah, I see that's down there.
That's wonderful.
Down to 1.33.
There you go, Jeff.
That's awesome,
wonderful.
Jeff.
Wonderful.
All right, let's keep going here.
And here's another thing about the PSA. If you have prostate cancer, it's not coming down. It's going to go on up. So just monitor it. Don't freak out about it just because it's high. I've seen a lot of people with a PSA of 18 that just from a large prostate. And I've seen people with prostate cancer with a PSA of 1. So it's not a perfect test, although, you know, there's some credence to it for sure. I wouldn't ignore the PSA. It helps us out a lot. So
thank you for that context, Velma. Thank you for putting that in there. Okay, let's get to Josh here. I have a rod through my tibia. Any tips for the pain? It was a year ago, and I'm 27. Josh, thanks so much for being here, and thank you so much for this question, man. Any tips for pain?
That's a tough. I'd probably use, again, you're probably going to have to be on a meloxicam medicine. That's a pretty safe medicine. You know, I think way safer than ibuprofen or naproxen to leave. As far as the heart risk and stomach, for sure, it's safer. So I'd probably get on that. I'd use turmeric as well. I'd make sure my orthopedic surgeon, you know, x-rays it and let you know kind of what's going on with it. The other thing I think about is sometimes I'll use gabapentin for it. That's a prescription medicine for neuropathic pain. Sometimes I use low-dose naltrexone in it as well. Yeah. But, you know, that's a toughie. I don't know when you got it, but, again, talk to your orthopedic surgeon. Something else may be going on that is affecting you in that area.
All right, Josh, keep us posted on that. Thank you for being here and bringing in that question. I hope that helps just a little bit. We're going to keep going. I see D. Lynn. There we go. D. Lynn is asking, a friend started taking Ozempic for diabetes. He's only taken one shot. He's very nauseous. Second shot tomorrow. How long does this sickness last? D. Lynn, your friend is not alone. This is a very common complaint. So, Doc, how are you kind of coaching people?
It usually goes away. Yeah. I mean, just keep trying it unless you're really can't stand it. Some people, I use Zofran when they first start out on it. That seems to help the nausea a lot. It's very safe. It's non-drowsy. So I would do that. And, again, if they just can't tolerate it, consider switching over to Mounjaro, which is another Zepbound, same thing. Yeah. Way less nausea with that, I think.
And also for any of the, you know, GLP-1s, the GIP questions, Mounjaros, the semaglutides, the Ozempics, keep in mind, definitely watch the berberine video that we put out today on the Common Sense MD. It seems to be very synergistic. Is that the right word?
Yeah, I love berberine.
Yeah,
I
especially mean, if you're dealing with some of the nausea and not wanting, but you're not going to lose as much weight. That's the
thing. If you use that instead of Ozempic, you won't lose it as quickly for sure, but a lot less side effects, not many, or virtually no side effects from it that I've seen, especially when you're doing the dihydroberberine, which is the one I recommend.
Real quick, can you tell the people who should not have berberine, because you mentioned it today?
Oh, nursing mothers or pregnant women.
Okay.
And again, if you're on a diabetic medicine, your sugars will come down a little bit, so watch out for hypoglycemia. And the same thing, it'll lower your blood pressure too, so watch out for that. Mm. So maybe it'll get you off some of your medicines, hopefully.
D. Lynn, thank you for that question. Let's get to Barbara here. Needing some help with neuropathy from chemotherapy, is there anything natural that you can recommend?
I'm sure they've tried prescription medicines on you. But, yeah, sometimes some of the chemo causes almost a permanent neuropathy. Mm. you know, especially the cisplatin type drugs. But I would use any kind of anti-inflammatory. I would maybe try B6. That's probably the best supplement I've seen for neuropathies, B6. But get the right dose. I wouldn't take over 100 milligrams of it. It could make it worse. So I'd say B6 is number one. Turmeric could probably be number two. And again, there's neuropathy gels that some people use, that some of the compounding pharmacies use, that have different things in it, like topical ketamine. I like Toradol. I like Ultram. And a lot of times they can do it topically as well. So ask about a compounding pharmacist making a neuropathy cream for you.
Barbara, great question. I hope that helps a little bit, and keep us posted with how you're doing with the chemo. We'll certainly be thinking about you. Let's get to Vicky here. What do you recommend for high cortisol level?
Interesting question. That's a great. Yeah. That's great. You know, I just got back my Cleveland this week, and my cortisol level is a little bit on the high side compared to what it usually is. And so I think I'll get that 4-point salivary curve to see where I am during the rest of the day. But, yeah, I like the adrenal adaptogens. I think, you know, if you are stressed a lot, I love saffron. That's one of my favorites. You know, my stress formula, I have saffron, ashwagandha, and L-theanine, and all in one pill. I like that one a lot. Ginseng helps a lot. You know, making sure your thyroid is normal and that your insulin levels are good. Eating a non-inflammatory diet. Ashwagandha is another one that I use a lot for that. So I think those are all good things you can do. And find out, if you are stressed out, what's stressing you out? How can you change it? Are you getting a good night's sleep? Are you exercising? Mm. Are you stressed out with relationships or job or, you know, in that case, sometimes change is really good.
Yeah.
You try to figure it out.
Great question, Vicky. Thank you for bringing that up. The high cortisol thing is it's a really big deal. So thank you for asking. I know I know there's more people in here that's helping.
And if it's really, really high, then you need to watch for Cushing's disease. That's unusual, but you know, you're probably just talking about a mildly high cortisol level.
All right, let's get to Trevor here. Trevor, hey guys, hope you can offer some insight, please. Trevor, we're gonna try here. I recently started taking Adderall to help with ADHD. However, my hands get extremely cold and almost numb. On Sunday, this lasted from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. I could not get them warmed back up. Any tips or insight on what's causing this?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't hear that. I treat a lot of adult ADD. You know, it's almost like it's setting off kind of a – it was just your hands, a Raynaud's phenomena, which is a vasospasm. I just don't see that much. I suppose it could trigger that. The thing I worry about more with the medicines that are, you know, more adrenergic, the ones that are stimulants, or like Adderall and Vyvanse, and those really is more of a symptom that it comes like a clenched jaw or something, or, you know, more of a facial tightness. I've seen that very few times, but I have seen it, and then you just have to quit it. But again, if you stop it and it goes away, and then you try it again, it's definitely causing it. So unless it's something other concurrently, but you know what I use for Raynaud's in males or females is Cialis, because it's vasodilator. If you want to just do pure over-the-counter, you could try taking some L-arginine or L-citrulline that are natural vasodilators. You could try that, but that's extremely unusual. So stop taking it and just see how you do. Yeah. If you can't take it, you might even consider trying something a lot less potent, like L-tyrosine. Sometimes I'll use that for ADD. Mm. I use L-tyrosine in the morning and L-tryptophan at night. It's a good combination. But that is unusual. You know, you might want to be checked for autoimmune diseases as well. Just make sure look at some of your titers, like your ANA and your RF and some things like that. Something else may be going on that kind of triggered that you may need to get to the bottom of.
Super interesting. Thank you for that question, Trevor. I hope that helps just a little bit. We're going to keep going here to get to as many people as we can. Loretta is asking, does low estrogen levels cause joint pain, especially in hips?
I think it can, yeah. I mean, it's not an usual thing you look at when, with low estrogen, usually you're looking for other stuff like hot flashes, night sweats, decreased libido, decreased muscle, hair loss, all that. But really it could, because low estrogen can cause osteopenia and osteoporosis. So I would definitely get a bone density scan and look at that. But yeah, a lot of the people I put on hormones, whether it be estrogen or testosterone, it helps joint pain. So it could, get your, get replacement if you can.
Thank you, Loretta, for that. Let's get to Luann here. Luann, thank you for this question. This is such a great question. And I know there's a lot of people who are wanting to ask the same thing. So thank you. What do you do for women in perimenopause that is factor V positive? Real quickly, can you just tell what factor V positive is?
It's a blood clotting thing. Again, remember, with hormones, you can use transdermals. They don't affect your clotting factors because they don't run through the liver. So I'm comfortable with using either pellets or creams in women that have, a predisposing blood clotting disorder, because it won't interfere. We can even use it, of course, in people that are on Coumadin, much less, of course, Brilinta and, those other blood thinners. But it's certainly something that you might want to look at. I certainly wouldn't want to take a birth control pill. But great question.
Luann, I hope that helps a little bit. And let's keep going here. Let's get to Carol.
Your heart doctor may not know that, but it is safe to use transdermally.
Which one is?
The estrogens, transdermal estrogens.
Thank you for that, Doc. Thank you, Luann. This is Carol here. What sleeping positions is our best worst? So this is in regard to kind of back health.
Yeah. Sleeping on your back's the best way. Yeah. Some people that have sleep apnea can't sleep on their back. But side sleeping would be next best. Sleeping on your stomach is the worst. I found that sleeping with because I'm a side sleeper, sleeping with a pillow between my legs definitely keeps some of the pressure off my back. But definitely, if you can sleep on your back, that's the best. But only about 15% of people do.
Yeah.
So most people are modified side sleepers. So keep a pillow between your legs. It really keeps a lot of pressure off your lumbar spine.
One thing with me sleeping.
Get a good mattress.
When I started nose breathing at night, that helped me be able to sleep on my back.
How'd you start nose breathing at night?
Just tape your
mouth shut?
I didn't tape it. I just closed it.
Okay.
No, I mean, I
a lot of people tape their mouth shut and they'll breathe through their nose, which is great. You need to be a nose breather.
Thank you, Carol. Let's go to Jessica Lee here. Jessica, thank you for hanging out tonight. Can you tell me if a TSH of 1.03, T4 free, 1.2, and T3 free of 3.5 is normal? Did I read those right? TSH of 1.03.
Yeah, those are pretty good numbers.
And then goes on to say, I had my thyroid pulled due to stomach issues, but don't follow up with GI for 2 months. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, those are pretty good normals. Again, with thyroid, we look at symptoms as well. Sometimes we'll dig a little deeper, like with a reverse T3, if you really still have a lot of symptoms of a low thyroid. But certainly when you look at those three numbers, those look pretty decent. One good way to check your thyroid is take your basal body temperature for a week before you get out of bed and see what your basal body temperature is. If it's under 97, you probably have a suboptimal thyroid. But certainly a TSH of 1 and a free T3, is normal. And now whether it's optimal, I don't know. There have to be other things you look at. You need to look at cortisol levels, insulin levels. But that doesn't look too bad at all.
Jessica, thank you for putting that question. I hope that helps a little bit. Honestly, the thyroid questions are so interesting, and there's so much misunderstanding around it. So thank you for letting us talk about that. Ashley is asking, hi, Doc. What are your thoughts on Baja Gold sea salt? It's my understanding that it has 91 minerals in a teaspoon. I was thinking of taking that instead of drinking electrolyte water once a day. That's interesting.
Yeah, I haven't taken the Baja Gold sea salt personally. I didn't know that. But the one I like that I get, gosh, it's blanking out on me. Maybe I'm getting CRS disease. You know what that is?
CRS, I mean, I don't think that's Alzheimer's.
No, can't remember. Shh. You know, can't say the last word. But no, gosh, what's the name of that sea salt that I use? It's not the pink Himalayan.
Redmond's.
Yeah, Redmond's Real Salt. Yeah.
Yeah, Redmond's.
Yeah, Redmond's Real Salt's the one I like. But I'd like to try it. You know, you've given me a good idea to go look at it. What's the name of that LM? What's that electrolyte mix?
LMNT.
Yeah, I've got to get some of that in.
I bought you that for your birthday.
I know. I got to order some more. But that is just.
It's God, the best one.
I was talking to somebody today. Maybe it was Katie who was taking it for something. And
I think I saw Andy have it today too.
Yeah, that's one I'm going to probably get for electrolytes.
Yeah,
I need to order it. I need to probably stock it in the office. It's so good.
Linda loves LMNT too. Yeah, it's really good. It is really good.
I have got to get some of that in the office. Katie, if you're listening to this, can you order us a bunch of it, please?
Please, Katie.
She ordered my beef jerky today from Whole Foods. So, and something else. Oh, my lacrosse ball for my myofascial release.
You're back.
And something else. Yeah, she ordered me something else I asked for. Oh, another exercise mat for the office.
Andy had one today. I thought I saw him have some. Okay, I want to get this for Luann. So she wants relief from the perimenopausal symptoms with the factor five.
I agree. You know, again, if you're having hot flashes and you're just totally scared of hormones, which you shouldn't be, but you can try some other stuff like black cohosh, probably evening primrose oil is my favorite. So you could try some of the herbals that will help you too. A lot of the gynos put people on SSRIs for the relief of the symptoms. It helps a little bit. I'm not big on the SSRIs, but.
Luann, thank you for that. I hope that helps a little bit. Thank you, Doc.
And there's a new type of non-hormonal hot flash medicine, and I've never used it. I looked up the insurance. It's real expensive. And again, it's just for symptoms. It's not going to afford you any of the other beneficiaries of taking real hormones like bone, brain, muscle, and all that. So, but great comment, though. Great question.
Thank you, Luann, for that. I'm going to put this up from Roel. Yes, we will definitely make a video on this. I think that's so important around how to measure macros. I want to say, Robin, we've done one on Explain This.
That'd be a good one for Lucas.
Yeah, Lucas needs to do one, too, just about how to measure. I'm thinking he's talking about how on a food scale, like actual food scale.
Yeah.
Little demo there. Thank you for that comment, Roel. Let's get to Connie. Thank you, Connie Lynn. If you take a low dose of spironolactone, spironolactone, how should you handle when starting on berberine? Great question.
I don't see any contraindication of that. If you're taking it for your blood pressure, you could watch your blood pressure, but most people take spironolactone or taking it for different reasons, acne, or sometimes PCOS, or, you know, just a diuretic, a safe diuretic. I love spironolactone. So you're probably taking a low dose, like 25, 50 milligram maybe. Some people have to take 200 milligrams of it. But just watch, you know, just start out once a day on the berberine and just watch your blood pressure. It's the only thing I could tell you that could cause any kind of effect on it at all.
Thank you, Connie Lynn. Amber on Facebook is asking, can you tell me if there would be a contraindication or contradiction to using growth hormone secretagogues and spinal foraminal stenosis?
Foraminal stenosis.
I'd like to use one for muscle strength, but I'm concerned if growing bone in the stenosis area of my spine. I've read they affect bone density. What about bone growth?
No, I don't think there's any. Again, I've got a terrible back, and I take it. I take a secretagogue. I don't see any problem with that at all. You're not going to get any extra, you know, bone growth or anything like. You know, the thing you worry about with real growth hormone is you can get some bone growth, like, but mostly in the skull, like frontal bossing and things like that, and in the jaw. But I don't think it's going to affect your, especially a secretagogue, it's not going to affect that.
Amber, thank you for that question. One, I just got to say hello to Gual. Gual, what's going on? She's in France. I have no idea what time it is there, but I know it's extremely early. So thank you, Gual, for being here. I hope that answer helped around fenbendazole. If there's anybody on our team and on YouTube, can we put a link to the, is it the Happy Healing?
Yeah.
The Happy Healing.
Yeah, Katie
site.
Will put a link up there to that store. But yeah, Annie's going to France this summer, my other son, and he's going right before the Olympics. That's one place I would love to be this summer is in France. Wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be so much fun. Gual, thank you. We will. We'll put that link for the Happy Healer.
Je m'appelle Thomas. Killer retail.
He took that in elementary school.
I did take French.
Let's keep going here. We've got a few more minutes. Sarah Carter's asking suggestions for weight loss. I have Hashimoto's, insulin resistant, and postmenopausal. Any quick thoughts around this for Sarah?
Yeah. You know, of course, try berberine first. It's an inexpensive way to do it. Get the dihydroberberine. You know, look at make sure your Hashimoto's is intact. Take selenium, zinc. Look at your TPO levels and look at your diet. You know, gluten free, probably dairy free as much as possible. And look into if that doesn't work. Look into Ozempic and Mounjaro. I mean, they work great. And look at your hormones. Hopefully, you're getting some hormonal evaluation and treatment with bioidentical hormones.
All right, Sarah, thank you. I'm going to put this up for Gual, so you can look up Happy Healing Store on Amazon as well. Thank you, Barbara, for putting that in there for us. Let's get we're going to take just one or two more, and then we're going to call it an evening. Let's see real quick for Carolyn. This is a very common question we're getting. What is your thoughts on the shingles vaccine? Any quick thoughts?
You know, I'm not against it. You know, I've become a little bit more skewed towards a lot of them. But from personal experience, a few years ago, I took one. You know, now it's a Shingrix, it's a two-shot deal. I took one and felt so bad for the whole weekend, I never took the second one. Apparently, on the second one, you feel worse than the first one. Although, you know, some people take them and don't have any side effects. You know, shingles can be bad. You know, you're seeing all kinds of advertisements for it right now. But, you know, there's also treatment for shingles, you know, especially early. So I'm not against it, you know. But also I start to get a little bit skewed from what happened two or three years ago on some of these things. Although it's a different type of technology. So I'm not against it. Make your own decision, you know, and just – use your own judgment on it.
Yeah.
See how you feel. If you have a problem with other vaccines, they make you feel terrible. Think about not getting it. But, you know, definitely if you've had an episode of shingles, don't get one for 6 months. You have to wait 6 months after an episode of shingles.
I want to go to Instagram real quick. I see Elements Massages in here. Elements, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us tonight. I want to get to A.R. Hayes real quick. Can high levels of vitamin D cause anxiety and brain fog? That's interesting.
I've seen that one time.
Really?
I did see that one time. What level was it? Oh, it was like 160. This guy was taking so much vitamin D. It was ridiculous. So get your levels checked and see. You know, the main thing you look out for there is kidney stones.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're prone to them, but don't be afraid to get it up to 100. You know, I like mine up to around 90 possible. But great. Yeah, I don't know why it would cause that. You did take a long time to get up there that high, though.
Yeah. Thank you for that, AR Hayes, over on Instagram. Thank you for everybody who's hanging out with us over there. We're going to take this one last question and then call it an evening. From Nicole Davis, are you seeing a lot of autoimmune diseases in young adults? And why do you think this is?
I do.
Keep it PG
rated?
Yeah.
No cussing or anything? We are seeing a lot of autoimmune diseases. You know, some of it may have been kicked off by the COVID. There's no doubt about that. Or the jab. I've seen that a lot. But also, we live in a toxic world. I mean, remember, most of your autoimmune diseases arise from your gut. You know, your immune system, at least 80% of it's located in your gut. So I think with the bad foods, with the toxins that are in your foods, I think stress kicks off autoimmune disease. There's no doubt in my mind that it does. So I think a lot of these other factors, I'll often tell people we're all walking around like a loaded gun. The environment pulls the trigger. The environment, what you put in your mouth and how stressed you are probably the two most important environmental toxins there are. So don't ignore stress. And young adults are more stressed than they used to be back when I was a young adult. No doubt about it. We're just seeing stuff we never saw before. So you have to either, you know, lack of poor sleep habits, stress, toxins in our food, gut problems, that microbiome that's imbalanced. You know, see Robin if you're having a problem with that. Get a GI map. Take Digest Shield,
yeah.
You know, avoid inflammatory foods, those type of things.
Nicole, it's such a great question. And that's something, again, like a lot of these, we're going to be, you know, talking more and more about, and, you know, any way that, you know, one thing I love about this community here is there's so many people in here sharing what's working for them in the comments. So make sure if you're with us live, look at the comments and see what other people are doing that's working for them. Like I say always, we learn as much from you guys as you guys do from us. So thank you for putting that question in there and letting us talk about autoimmune disease. Real quick, I'm going to put this up. We've mentioned a lot of vitamins tonight. We have a couple vitamins on our online store, performancemedicine.net/shop. One is Berberine Max that we did a video on today. Digest Shield was just mentioned, is up there. Huge shout out to Shield Nutraceuticals and Steve. As well, gosh, there's a whole bunch of stuff on there, but check it out. Yeah. We certainly appreciate it. We just appreciate you guys hanging out with us tonight. And you know what? This is fun doing this live.
Yeah, I like it that we looked a lot alike.
I mean, look at us. Look at that. I mean, this is a cool family photo.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
My Grandma Mary's in here. Can we Snapchat that?
Does.
Can we Snapchat?
Can you do that
We got dogs coming down.
Yeah, I hear them coming.